It's Cornerbacks Week. We're ranking the top 10 in football. We'll talk about a couple of Broncos, the free agent prize of last offseason and this offseason, and why one of the biggest stars in football just barely eked his way onto the list. All that and much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling, here as always with Andy Benoit, and we are back on track with the position rankings. We are going with cornerbacks today. I guess the big news, if you are an avid fan of the show and you listen to last year's series, we have the return of Jeff Irwin, our researcher this week, who there are some Jeff Irwin fans out there with his, let's say, unique approach to ranking players.
And that unique approach is ruining the rankings for the rest of us, and he managed to do that again. And we will get into that. I mean, he went really Jeff Irwin. He made up for the 5 week absence and went really Jeff Irwin-y on us. On the plus side, though, his document he sends in with the little nuggets we asked the researchers to give us the facts, he formatted this thing. It's like a chart.
It is.
Like it's got different fonts and colorful fonts and everything. I mean, he put effort into that, which is good because he needed to put some effort somewhere into the show because he clearly didn't do it on the ranking part of it.
I think there's only one that really, and obviously we'll talk about it when we get to it. I think there's only one that will really have you up in arms, Andy. But yeah, this sheet, if you've ever worked in broadcasting, which we do, but we don't, you know, we don't get that professional with it. But this is what they give to play-by-play guys who are doing games.
Yeah, no, we feel
very
legit
impressive
with this. Yeah.
We love all of the researchers who have rotated through, but yeah, you're in for a treat. It's a Jeff Irwin show, but more importantly, it's a cornerback show. We are counting down the top 10 in football going into the 2017 season. Just a reminder for those of you who have listened before and may have forgotten, or for anyone who is new, the way we do this, it is AP poll style. It is Andy, myself, and this week it is Jeff. We ranked our top 15 cornerbacks. We combined the rankings like they do with the AP poll. If you got a first place vote, you get 15 points. Second place, 14 points. All the way down to 15th place vote is worth 1 point. Andy's votes count double because he is twice as smart, at least, as anyone out there. And that's how we came up with the rankings. So we're going to count down the top 10. We will get to the others receiving votes at the end of the show. But let's go into it with number 10.
Number 10.
And this is Josh Norman. It was a year of change for Josh Norman. Not only the new team, obviously, but a little bit of a different approach to what they asked him to do.
Remember the first 2 weeks of the season, he did not travel with number one wide receivers, and they played Pittsburgh in week one, so Antonio Brown, and Dallas, I believe, was week two, which would have been Dez Bryant. And everybody was wondering, hey, why is he not? Why did you sign him for all this money if he's not traveling with number one receivers? He traveled at times in Carolina. And when you travel with the number one, that doesn't mean you're shadowing him man-to-man Deion Sanders style. Mm-hmm. It just means you're playing that side of the field. And Washington in week three against Odell Beckham, boy, a big slate of receivers to start out against. But he finally did travel with Beckham in week three. Beckham ate his lunch, by the way. But overall, Norman started to be used the way that you want him to be used. And now the plan this season is for him to continue traveling with number one receivers. I think that's the right approach. I think Norman is that quality of a defender, at least if you're playing a zone-based scheme. Norman's very good in spatial reasoning and zone coverage, and especially downfield when the ball is in the air. So I think he'll have a better season this year in Washington than he did last year, and I thought he was overall pretty solid in Washington. I don't think he's a true number one lockdown corner on an island type of guy, but again, they're not asking him to do that a whole lot.
Yeah. And I'm not really sure how many of those guys are in the league right now. True number one lockdown guys.
Not very many. You're right. Yep, you're right. Not very many. And in fairness to Washington, by the way, and Norman, because I don't want to make him sound utterly one-dimensional, they did play more man coverage as last season progressed, and he was fine there. I think they'll play more zone this year under Greg Minuski at defensive coordinator.
Yeah, it's look, he's going to get Beckham twice. He's going to get Alshon Jeffrey twice now. And, You know, obviously he'll have Dez Bryant twice, injuries pending there. I mean, he's going to be tested a lot. I feel like that was one thing. It was a bigger spotlight being in Washington and facing, let's say a higher Q rating, number of receivers here. It was a tough slate last year, and he did hold up okay. I feel like there's an impression that it was more of an up and down season than maybe it was compared to his last year in Carolina.
But the dirty little secret is every time a big-time corner changes teams, it's almost all and the spotlight goes on them like that.
Yeah.
They almost always wind up being more up and down than you expect, because the reality is playing cornerback in the NFL is incredibly difficult. It's the most difficult job in the NFL. You are totally reactionary, and you're reacting to the best athletes on offense, the wide receivers. The wide receivers are better than the corners in pro football. So no matter who you are, there are a few guys on this list that this is not true of, but they're on this list. They're the top of the top. Almost everyone else, if you get targeted, eventually you will get exposed. So you have to then extend the conversation. You can't just say, well, I got thrown at, so he's no good because they completed the pass. You have to extend it and say, well, all right, so what makes a quality corner then? Because the defense is still competing. So how is he being used? What are the guys around him able to do accordingly? When he is making the plays, when is he making the plays? It's all relative. I had this issue. Someone on Twitter I saw was saying they chart every single throw. And, well, I chart every throw, and so I grade the guy. Not every throw is equal in the NFL. Not every snap is equal. There are different plays that have different meanings for guys based on the circumstance and based on what that guy's asked to do. And that's why you can't just chart stuff. So this stuff it's all relative. And I think within the context of Washington's scheme, Norman has done his job for them.
Number nine.
Well, let's jump ahead to number nine here. This will be the controversial one. This is Richard Sherman, number nine on the list this year. I believe he was number two on our countdown last year. Jeff Irwin gave him his first place vote. I gave Sherman my third place vote, so I can't exactly
point. Did you really?
I
didn't even pay attention. I didn't pay attention to that. I didn't know you did that.
Me and Irwin, we left you on the island, Andy. Do you want to say where you ranked Richard Sherman? It's up to you.
Well, it sounds worse than it is. I think there, even though the wide receivers are better than the corners in the NFL, there are still a lot of good corners. And so I had Sherman technically not ranked. I think I had him, 16, 17, something like that.
Yep.
That makes it sound, first of all, that still means you're a top-tier corner. There are 64 starting corners in the NFL, so you're still an upper quadrant guy.
But if you're 16th best corner, you're the top half of the number one corners.
Okay. Yep. So Sherman's still a quality guy, and I think the question with him, because he was not the same player last year, and we've been over this. What was different is he struggled against in-breaking routes. So routes that were near the sideline, and especially vertical routes, he was great at. That's what he's been unbelievable at, the best in the league for several years. He hasn't really slowed down there. But when you force him to change directions and follow receivers inside on slant patterns, dig routes, post routes, that's where he struggled. And he's always been a little bit up and down in that regard. He can't be great at everything most of the time, but he was way more down than up relative to his previous years last season. So the question is that because of the undisclosed knee injury, or is age starting, even though he's only in his late 20s, I believe, maybe early 30s soon, is age starting to catch up to him? And we'll find out this season.
Well, did you see any difference in him when Earl Thomas was out late last year?
They were playing they played more man coverage down the stretch last season.
Yeah.
So he was asked to do a little bit more. He was asked to do some different things. Now, in their cover three foundation, a lot of times he winds up playing man coverage out of that. They play man-to-man on the outside, zone inside in their cover three. So I don't know if the style is totally different, but when they went to more pure man-to-man, that does change the way Sherman can play his man-to-man, because he doesn't have the same kind of help around him now. He can't play to the Earl Thomases of the world, the Cam Chancellors. He doesn't have the same help coverage inside. So let's think about it. He's struggling against in-breaking routes, and they're playing more man coverage, which means he doesn't have the same help inside. That, to me, is why his name was floated on the trading block this year. My guess is Seattle is they're just as leery of him this season right now as we are. They don't know what they have either. If he struggles like he did last year, then they're not going to be able to expand their scheme the way they've been wanting to do.
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, more man covers last year. That cover three has been, you know, as good as any defense in the league over the past 5 years here. It looked like teams sort of solved it a little bit, especially that Falcons game mid-season when they gave up the two long touchdowns. Is this the future of the Seahawks? Is it going to be much more man-heavy? Do you think they have to go in that direction considering where the league is right now?
I do, because the other teams that play that style, the Falcons themselves under Dan Quinn, former Seahawks defensive coordinator, and the Jaguars under Gus Bradley last year, who was also Seattle's former defensive coordinator, they also played more man coverage as the season wore on. So everyone who's playing this Seahawks style cover three, they're playing more man coverage, less of the cover three. I think some of the holes of the cover three, and every coverage has holes, that's the nature of it. I think some of those holes and those flaws have started to be exposed a little bit, but they've also had an offseason now to adjust and put wrinkles into it. And Seattle's cover three, it has evolved over the years. It's not the same as it was. They've done a little more. You can do that when you've had the same cast of players playing the same scheme for several seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, you just kind of wonder what, you know, I don't want to say the window's closing, but you know, you kind of never suspect it when the window closes. And in this league, if you don't have, you know, a Tom Brady or an Aaron Rodgers or a Peyton Manning carrying your offense, boy, it can close before you ever expected it would.
Yep, and now you're kind of talking a little more general Seattle defense. And so on that note, before we move on to our number eight guy here, If the defense is to stay at the level it has been, they've got to figure out their number two corner spot, the spot opposite Sherman. That's not a top 10 guy. Deshaun Shedd's coming off a late season injury, probably won't be ready early on. And then the thing no one ever talks about with this defense, Gary, is the pass rush is tremendous. And if that pass rush is clicking, they're going to be competitive no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, they're an older pass rush too, though.
Well, Frank Clark's young. Frank Clark, McDowell,
yeah, you're right.
Their second-round rookie. And you know, Jaron Reed, actually, their second-round rookie last year. And I would never have guessed this to be the case. Even after I spent time with him in the film room watching him at Alabama, he became a little bit more of a nickel pass rusher for him last season. I thought he was a nose tackle. So they're always replenishing, though. If Jaron Reed continues to progress, he's not going to get 10 sacks, but he can be a guy. Frank Clark can get 20 sacks and if he plays enough snaps. He is unbelievably quick. They'll have Malik McDowell, their second-round pick this year. They have Nazir Jones, their third-round pick. They're always replenishing at that spot. The guys you're kind of talking about are Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. And, yes, they do need them as well, but I don't see them declining yet. I haven't seen evidence of that.
Okay. All right. Going to be an interesting year in Seattle.
You're right, though. When it happens always sooner than expected. So when they do decline, we're going to be caught off guard by it.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, and you know, whether it's the Seth Wickersham article about how, you know, Sherman basically thinks they should have multiple Super Bowls at this point, and he might be right, and you kind of wonder. I mean, goodness, the NFC is stacked. I mean, there are a lot of good teams in the NFC. It's tough to get back there. Ask the Carolina Panthers.
That's the NFL, right? Yeah. That's the NFL for you.
AFC, if you have Tom Brady right now, you're probably feeling pretty good that you're going to be in the Super Bowl every year.
Well, you might feel that way, but look, Denver was in it 2 years ago. Kansas City's been 12-4 recently. Houston has the best defense. Pittsburgh has the most weapons. Baltimore can sneak in at 10-6. They've done it before. They've got the same kind of team that they had in 2012. Oakland's on the rise. I mean, it's a competitive league.
It's a competitive league. It's much less competitive in the AFC, though.
Well,
I can see Denver, I guess.
Here's what I'm saying. There's 6 to 7 Super Bowl caliber teams in the AFC. One of them is much, much better than the rest still. That doesn't mean the other ones aren't Super Bowl caliber, though. It's not a 7-game series in the playoffs.
Yeah. I guess. I guess when it comes down to it, could you picture anyone going to Foxborough and winning in the postseason?
Yeah, it's happened before. This is the most talented Patriots team we've seen. I get that. And would I predict a team to beat them? No, I wouldn't predict it. But we've seen it before. Remember in Baltimore, 2011 they went in and ran the ball right down their throats and just throttled them. Denver beat them back in 2005. I know it's a whole different team, but remember that year, it was the 2006 season, that year it was believed that, New England was invincible in the playoffs. 2005. They were, you know, every time you think the Patriots are invincible, they've still lost. I mean, they're a great franchise. Five rings. But how many years has Brady played? About 15 seasons now? So they're not winning the Super Bowl every single season. I mean, let's keep some perspective here.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Let's do this. Let's make a bet. All right? I'll take the AFC field. You take the Patriots. It's a Super Bowl bet. 1 year salary. I earn back some of the 2 year salary that I owe you from our bets last year. Unless you want to do that bet with me?
You owe me 5 years right now, so I will give you odds on this because I think the Patriot. Yeah, well the
five.
Yeah, you owe me five right now.
I'll go back.
I will put in the article field when the show is out. I will put in the article field what the bets I've won are. Last year okay. It was I believe the first one was that AFC East team. Not the Patriots would make the playoffs. That's where it all started, with the Dolphins making the playoffs.
And I said, yeah, they did make the playoffs.
But, I would give you 2 years back, and I would take one more year. I will give you odds, because I think the Patriots are better than even odds to go back. I haven't looked at the odds yet, but I would assume they are.
What I just noticed, we don't have any Patriots in our top 10.
We don't.
Corners.
Yeah, kind of a surprise. We'll maybe touch on a couple guys.
You could take umbrage
with that. Yeah. Couple guys and the others receiving votes.
Number eight.
But yeah, let's jump ahead to number eight right now, and that is Janoris Jenkins. And look, a year ago we were kind of talking about, boy, this is a big risk with Jenkins coming in. You know, he's an aggressive guy. He's a little bit up and down. Can he be a steady number one? I didn't think so, but certainly last year he was.
The Rams didn't think so either. They basically had to choose Janoris Jenkins or Tremaine Johnson. They chose Tremaine Johnson. My guess is because Jenkins had been a little less stable, he tended to give up some big plays with his gambles, and that's a double-edged sword. We didn't see any of that last season. He was rock solid. They played a little more man coverage. Not a ton. I mean, the Giants, they change up their coverage almost snap to snap. You really have to watch them carefully on film. But whatever the coverage was, Jenkins was matching up to top receivers, and he was winning more often than not. They would not have been the team. They probably would not have made the playoffs without him last season.
Yeah. No, that was they had as good a free agency class as I can remember last year. I mean, they hit on all those guys, and Jenkins, I think, was the most pleasant surprise of all of them. He is. He's an easy top 10 guy at this point.
Number seven.
Let's jump ahead. Let's go number seven. This is the prize of this year's free agent class. This is A.J. Bouye, the newest Jacksonville Jaguar, who, I mean, look, when you're talking about improved players here, this is one of two undrafted guys looking at this list that made our top 10 here. The Bouye is the first one, but you know, he was a forgotten man. He was a number four corner in Houston, and last year he emerged as a star.
The most improved player in the NFL last season, in my opinion. He was terrific. And Houston does a lot of, you know, he's played safety before as well. I don't know if he was ever a pure safety, but he essentially, the way they used him within their scheme, he has played in space inside in the middle of the field, which is unusual. Not a free safety, but kind of down low in the box near that area. Here's the deal with Bouye. His understanding of help coverage and also playing and matching up within the context of that help coverage, kind of what we talked about with Richard Sherman a few guys ago, Bouye is very good at that, exceptional at that. And I think because of that, he's going to really fit what they do in Jacksonville. They play that Seahawks-style cover three.
Yeah.
If they want to go more man-to-man, they can, and Bouye can answer that bell. But if and their foundation, Bouye opposite Jalen Ramsey – those are two really long, athletic, physical corners. And in Bouye's case, Ramsey's got some learning to do. I think he will. I think he's going to be great. But in Bouye's case, he is tremendous at playing to the nuanced help of the coverage and winning at the top of a receiver's route. I think he's going to be really, really good for the Jaguars.
Yeah, they can certainly do they can do whatever they want schematically with that pair of cornerbacks right there. Todd Walsh gets retained as defensive coordinator there, so you figure there wouldn't be wholesale changes to what they do defensively as opposed to what they did under Gus Bradley.
What they have, though, that they haven't had before is a true man-to-man type of corner in Ramsey who can play inside or outside. And that, you're right, they can do anything schematically because they've got that matchup piece. In fact, I think you could argue, I think Bouye is going to be their best corner, but the way he's used and what he means to the game plan each week, I think Ramsey's going to be essentially their number one corner. He is a more versatile matchup piece.
Yeah. Oh, let's see if it adds up to wins, finally, for the Jaguars.
Number six.
For now, let's move on to number six. That is Xavier Rhodes, Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, we talked about Harrison Smith in the safety show, of course. What is it, you know, Rhodes traveled with number ones last year. What does that mean in this Mike Zimmer scheme?
Mike Zimmer likes his corners to disrupt wide receivers off the line of scrimmage. They call it free access, and every receiver would love to get free access off the line. Mike Zimmer knows that. He doesn't want to let them get free access. Some guys will play press and bail, so they'll line up like they're pressing, but then not actually deliver contact. Terrence Newman has always been one of those guys. It's just his style. That can work, but ideally you want a guy that lines up and presses, threatens to hit you in the throat when you're coming off the line, and then does. And that's Xavier Rhodes. And he has incredibly strong hands. His arms are long. He's just a thick player. He is long. He's tall. Most corners are not tall. And when you take a guy like that and play him outside in a press scheme, and especially in Minnesota's where they often have two safeties back deep, so your corners can be a little bit more aggressive because of that's a hard guy to contend with. And along the boundary where he can use the sideline as an extra defender, Rhodes is probably the best boundary corner in the NFL right now. Sherman's still in that discussion. Rhodes is great, though. He is so strong.
Yeah, and I mean, those Vikings cornerbacks, you're going to play cornerback for Mike Zimmer, you're going to tackle, and Rhodes is certainly one of the best in that area as well.
And the reason why, that's a great point, Gary, and the reason you have to tackle is if you play two safeties back deep, then the cornerback, and this is mostly in cover two, and they don't play straight cover two, but we're just talking concepts now. If you have two safeties back deep, your corners need to be able to tackle because they are the outside contain in a lot of your run defense concepts.
Number five.
All right, let's jump ahead to number five right here. This is Desmond Trufant of the Atlanta Falcons. Of course, missed the second half of last year with a torn pectoral. Would have been interesting to see how Super Bowl 51 might have played out had Trufant been healthy. But, I mean, this is a guy who is, and as evidenced by his ranking on our list, this is a guy who is emerging as a star number one cornerback here.
He's a guy that travels inside and outside. And where he's different than other corners, and again, not very many of them even travel to the slot or play outside, he can do it and play man and zone coverage. He is really talented like that. And that takes some football IQ to do that. I love his game. I thought they were done when he went out last season. And maybe, yeah, Gary, this is an appropriate time to give Robert Alford some love. He's not on our top 10 corner list. He's probably not. Yeah, he's not that kind of guy yet. But he took over the Trufant role gradually as last season progressed. And by the time they got to the Super Bowl, and he made some plays in that game, as we know, by the time they got there, he was their new Desmond Trufant. So the silver lining with Trufant being out is they discovered a lot of depth at corner because Jalen Collins also became a starter and he got better. They're now incredibly deep. I think they're going to play a lot of man coverage this season, if for no other reason than they are four guys deep at corner. Brian Poole's the fourth corner. There's no other team in the league that has four quality man-to-man corners. Denver's got three really high quality ones. Atlanta has four, and those three of those guys are getting better. Trufant might also be getting better. I mean, that's a defense on the rise there.
Yeah, I was going to say Alford, and again, he didn't make our list, but I thought as far as in-season improvement goes, I was stunned at how good he was down the stretch. He's a physical guy. He was often over physical. He was a target for flags. I didn't think he could hold up.
I didn't either, because he's a physical guy without a lot of strength. He's not Xavier Rhodes. He doesn't have the size.
Yeah.
He's not a naturally strong man. He's more of an agile-built corner who tended to be physical, which is a nice way of saying he gets penalties. And he didn't do that as much last season. They asked him to win on an island. He was able to do that. He got a lot. I'll be interested to see where he plays. I bet he's their slot corner this year, which means Brian Poole, who had an excellent rookie campaign, unfortunately, I bet he gets wedged out. I bet he's number four. Jalen Collins plays outside. Trufant's the other outside guy.
Yeah, that probably is how it adds up.
Number four.
Let's jump ahead to number four. This is Aqib Talib, who has, you know, for a guy who sort of came into the league and has had some off the field stuff, and it's kind of been like, boy, he's a risk. Let's see how long he lasts in the league. I mean, he is still going strong at age 31 here.
This feels a little bit high to me for Talib, and I'll tell you why. I like his game. I had him number seven.
Mm-hmm.
If he played on a defense that wasn't star-studded, I think his career would be viewed differently. He's a gambler. He comes with that old Janoris Jenkins factor, that double-edged sword. He's going to get some penalties. He'll get a little bit lazy once in a while on his technique, and he'll pay a price for that. But as an off-coverage corner where he's reading the receiver and the quarterback in his same line of vision, he is great at baiting you and then jumping routes. So he plays a looser style of man coverage, even though he's got a long frame and could probably win as a press man corner, and he does sometimes. He's a different type of corner. And guys like that, those guys get exposed. But in this case, they've got an unbelievable pass rush in Denver. Mm-hmm. They have two very good safeties. And opposite Talib, they have the most rock-steady corner in the league in Chris Harris, who's a guy that just lines up and covers people and goes unnoticed because he's so good at that. So Talib's in a really good position to where he's playing. He plays to his strengths really well in Denver.
Yeah, and he's, you know, have you seen signs of slowing down? This will be season 10 for him. That's typically the time of year that time of their career that a cornerback will start having some problems.
Yeah, I'd have to look at that, Clay. I'd have to watch for that specifically, I guess. Which I guess the answer means no, I haven't seen it yet, but I would imagine that's on the horizon. Corner's a hard position to stay active at like that. Again, he's a little bit unconventional because he's willing to give up some spacing and separation. He has the recovery ability, and he has those long arms, so that also helps in your recovery. He can get in those passing lanes later. So if he is slowing down, his style of play is conducive to masking that a little bit. Now, if you slow down too much, your recovery ability is not going to follow you. Well, I mean, you're not going to be able to make up that ground. So at some point, age will catch up to him, but I don't know if we're there yet. Denver's not using him differently yet.
All right.
Did you know Talib? I bet most people knew this. I didn't learn this, and this is embarrassing, but I didn't learn this until I went last year to Tulsa to play against Chris Harris one-on-one for that little May article we did in the offseason. and, you know, I didn't do well. I'm confident I'd do better now, but I didn't know that they were teammates in college. They both played at Kansas together. That's unbelievable.
They were there at the same time, huh?
They were there. Yeah, that's what I learned. So they played in college together at Kansas, which is not a football school, and they were not on a big-time successful team. That team had two corners that have gone on to be what a lot of people would agree are both top five, certainly top 10 NFL corners. How many times in the history of college football, let's say history last 25 years, so this era of college football, how many times has that even come close to happening? I'm asking our listeners, I'd like people to tell us, listeners, because I'd like to know that. I bet there hasn't been a better NFL tandem of corners that played together in college like that.
Boy, I didn't realize they overlapped. I watch a lot of college football. I don't watch a lot of Kansas college football, though. That is interesting. And by the way, we talked about this last offseason, but I just want to say one more time, this was last May you did this, or 2 Mays ago now, we're May 2016, but read Andy's article where he goes up against Chris Harris. It's one of my favorite things we've ever done on the MMQB. Just Google it. Me versus Chris Harris is the headline. It was awesome. Still one of my favorite things. I'm watching it right now.
I had a lot of fun with that. He was the perfect guy to do that with, too. He has the right demeanor, the right yep. amount of competitiveness, and he's a star. He was just fun. You know, you don't want to – I mean, anyone could go up and beat a good corner like Malcolm Butler. I wanted to go up against a great corner like Chris Harris.
Oh, man. All right, before we jump into the top three here, a couple of programming notes. So we're going to have a mailbag show probably right around the start of training camp, so keep those questions coming. Andy_Benoit, GGremling_SI. We're also on Facebook. You can do talkback at themmqb.com. But if you really want us to see your question, send it to iTunes reviews, Apple Podcast reviews. Leave a review, preferably 5 stars. Leave a review and leave a question, and we will see that question, and we will most likely answer it during the Mega Mailbag Show coming up. Also, if you want to leave any comments about these ranking shows, any criticism of our rankings, if you're fired up by this, if you take offense to the fact that Andy just said he would torch Malcolm Butler in a one-on-one situation, leave a review. Leave it in your review at the bottom, and we will see it. We will read it on the air. We will start doing some listener feedback during this part of the show on the remaining 4 position ranking shows. That's all I got right now.
Number three
right here. It is Marcus Peters. You know, we talked about guys, Aqib Talib and Janoris Jenkins, guys who are gamblers. That was Peters as a rookie, and he's still a gambler, but he did not get beat often last year.
He didn't. He has very good. He's probably the best. We talked about reading the quarterback and reading the receiver in the same line of vision, reading mm-hmm. through the receiver to the quarterback, as they call it. I think he's the best in the NFL at that right now, and that's why he gets so many interceptions.
Well, you know, the play that sticks out in my mind is when they went to Pittsburgh, that disastrous game for the Chiefs when they went to Pittsburgh early in the year, played in the rain and just got blown out of the building on Sunday night. Peters got beat deep by Sammy Coates, I believe it was, early in that game. And it was a great throw. He wasn't exactly torched. A great throw, did get beat deep. But is that still a weakness for him, playing downfield, tracking balls downfield?
He's very aggressive, and he's nosy, and he had been extremely aggressive in the weeks leading up to that. And Pittsburgh saw that on film and thought, here's a young corner that thinks he's the best in the league. And he's going to come out all hot-headed early in the game, ready to go. Let's run right by him and attack him for the aggressiveness. And that's going to happen sometimes. Peters will grow out of that. In fact, he did over the course of the season. That's just the nature of being that kind of corner. Again, there's no one in the league that is impermeable. So if you get thrown at, and Peters, with the nature of Kansas City's scheme, he does get thrown at times, and that's any corner in any scheme pretty much, they're going to get some on you. They just will. But the more Peters makes big plays, the less likely it is he's going to get thrown at. Defenses or offenses don't want to give up a pick six, and that's what Peters threatens. He's one of those very few guys that you worry about playing against because he might score points for his defense.
They got a couple guys on that defense with him and Eric Berry last year. It's a situation there too. They have some question marks at number two corner. Who ended up there late last year? Was it Ron Parker?
No, it was Terrence Mitchell down the stretch. Ron Parker yeah. used to be their number two corner. He now plays safety for him. And it's impressive that these guys do have these interceptions because the reason Parker moved over from number two corner to safety is because they do a lot of matchup coverages. They start out in cover three zone, but the way they play it, they're so aggressive out of it, they basically play man-to-man. It's not the same cover three as Seattle's. It's a totally different style. Cover three match. And typically, teams that are playing man-to-man, they're not generating as many turnovers because defenders, they're not looking at the quarterback when they're playing defense. They're in man-to-man, so they're looking at their receiver, so they don't see the ball. So Kansas City still generates turnovers out of a man-match coverage, and that's unusual, and that's quite impressive. And by the way, that guy Terrence Mitchell, who played for him down the stretch, mm-hmm. he was excellent. He was another guy that wildly improved over the course of the season. He came in, I thought he'd be a liability. came in as like their number four guy early on, had to play because of injuries to other guys. He was sensational for them.
Yeah. I mean, look, Peters is a guy. He, according to the Jeff Irwin stats here, 26 passes defensed. You don't see it that often from a guy who's the number one corner. Typically they don't get targeted that often.
And at some point, I think he is going to get, in fact, we might see it this season, he will be targeted less. He's a high and low player. His highs are incredibly high. His lows can be very low, and he gives up some plays. But those lows have started to dissipate, and he's just such a threat now. But if Mitchell's playing well in Kansas City, and they've got safeties who can play man-to-man in the middle of the field, still got to throw the ball somewhere. You can't avoid Marcus Peters if there are a lot of other good cover guys around him.
Number two.
Well, let's jump ahead to number two. We are staying in the AFC West for a third straight guy here. This is Chris Harris, the aforementioned Chris Harris, who shut down Andy Benoit, but more importantly, continues to be a shutdown corner inside and outside in Denver.
Well, look, I don't want to detract or get off track here, but it didn't quite shut down. I ran 19 routes. I got a catch, so he got me on 18 of them. But what I found with Chris Harris is when you get a quadruple move against him, which means your quarterback has to have about 12 seconds to throw, he will wear down over the course of the play, or he'll just get disinterested and let you catch the ball.
Yeah,
so that's why I have him number two. Is that you got to have that kind of compete? You got to want it a little more than that.
Yeah, I was gonna say his the opponent's passer rating that day against Chris Harris was, it was what, 1 for 19 for 7 yards.
8 yards, yeah. 7 yards, 7 or 8 yards. And the saddest part of the whole thing was after I caught the ball against him, I spun it on the ground at his feet, you know, like to taunt him, like a top. And I was so bad, he didn't even notice it. The ball did not spin cleanly. It wobbled around. I don't think he noticed that I'd done that.
Oh, man. Again, go read it if you haven't read it already. Or if you read it last year, just read it again. Me versus Chris Harris was the piece that Andy did. But let's talk about Chris Harris on the field here. He's a guy who plays inside and out, and he is, for the past 5 years here, been a star.
Yes, he has. I thought he was a little better in 2015 than he was in 2016. We're nitpicking now, but overall, he lines up and plays man to man anywhere. The slot is the hardest position to play in football, and I think every coach would agree.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly hardest defensive position. Let's put quarterback aside. Chris Harris is the best slot guy in the league. And when you look around the NFL, it's odd. That's the hardest position to play, but there aren't a ton of talented guys in the slot. A lot of corners, top-level corners, they don't slide inside. Chris Harris does do that.
You know, I've wondered that every year when we come around to draft time. Typically, your slot guys, you know, you have to be a little bit shiftier, and when you're shiftier, you're smaller, so you have the lower center of gravity. You can change direction a little bit better. You can play those two-way goes. Why are we not seeing teams investing more in, you know, there's still this emphasis on, you know, let's get the long guys. It's the old, you know, Seahawks thing. Let's get the 6'1", 6'2" guys with the 35-inch arms. And it seems like these smaller guys continue to slip, even as, you know, like we said, it's the most difficult position to play and therefore to fill on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, those guys with those longer arms, the value of that is you can get a really good jam on the receiver, and now you're establishing physicality and you're kind of dictating the first 5 yards of the route. You can't do that against the slot because the slot guy is 2 yards off the line of scrimmage, so he gets a clean release by default. So you eliminate the advantage of length a little bit there. And then with that two-way go that the slot receiver has, he can go inside or outside. Those longer guys, it's hard to be twitchy enough to move. There are coaches in the league that believe, I don't want anyone in the slot who's over 5'9", because you got to be low to the ground to be twitchy, and you have to be twitchy because the receiver can go left or right. There's no sideline to cheat your coverage to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a style of play. But I mean, look, we've seen Xavier Rhodes. He'll go to the slot every once in a while, and he's still effective. And if he can do that, then anyone can. I don't mean to, this is not disparaging. I mean, he's great. But if he can do that with his body type and his style of play, then it can be done. But remember, practice reps are limited. So Xavier Rhodes might be doing it well, but he's probably practicing it 10% of the time. And how good are any of these guys if we're giving them 10% of the practice reps?
Yeah, I just want to, just every year when it comes draft time, these 5'9 guys tend to get crossed off a lot of draft lists because they're too small. It's just not the style of player a lot of teams are looking for, and it seems like it's a, you know, it should be an emphasis with the value of slot receivers. I mean, guys, you know, who plays two receivers
the
majority of the time anymore? There's always three or four on the field.
I agree. So these multi-dimensional cornerback, these undersized corners, there should be more value for them, especially when you consider, I remember Ozzie Newsome said 10 years ago, we value a number three corner more than a starting safety. He probably wasn't talking about Ed Reed there, so I guess he means their strong safety. So there are guys that think that way around football, but you're right. It doesn't necessarily get reflected in draft decisions. And anymore, teams are starting to blitz their slot corners more for two reasons. One, you got to find a way to generate pressure. And the slot guys, they're close to the quarterback. They're disguised blitz. They're sometimes not accounted for in the pass protection. But for two, when you blitz off the slot, it acts as an outside run defender. So if they run the ball, it's not the worst thing to have the corner coming from that spot. So, and I've had coaches tell me, boy, if we just had a slot corner who could blitz, if we just had a slot corner who could cover, we could do so much more with our scheme. And you wonder, well, in that case, why aren't you going to get them? It's not like they don't exist. There probably aren't a lot of them. But there are guys who are 5'9 and twitchy and can play football at a high level. They need to be getting prioritized more, drafted more reps and practice, whatever it is.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see over the next couple of years.
Number one
on our list. Let's unveil it. Number one vote from me and Andy. He was the number three guy for Jeff Irwin, but this is Patrick Peterson for the second straight year. Is the number one cornerback on our countdown. It was a down year for the Cardinals. What did you think of Peterson's play last year, Andy?
Well, it's a down year for their offense. Their defense was actually, it was much better than it was even the year they went to the NFC Championship. And James Betcher, their defensive coordinator, did a great job because he runs an aggressive scheme. They're another man match team, so they start in cover three and match up out of it. They do that and they blitz, and there was not a very good number two corner on that team, and they still got the job done defensively. It just didn't work out for a variety of reasons, and they need to be a little bit better in the red zone. But the reason that defense works that way and the reason they were still effective last season, highly effective, they've got the best corner in the NFL. So they have half the field accounted for at almost all times. And Peterson can travel. He guarded Doug Baldwin at times. I wasn't sure he could play the slot. We've just talked about slot a lot so far. We don't need to get into it. But he can. He's done it. He did it very well against Seattle. Seattle is a tough team to play the slot against because they do so many pick routes with their slot receiver. We know he's good along the boundary. We know he's a playmaker. The one thing I have about, and I need to be careful because I'm going to go see him in about a week and a half, in fact. I'm going to spend some time with him. And just a word of caution to Patrick and his agents. I have him number one, so don't get carried away with this. He's not a good zone corner, though. And there were years. Remember when Richard Sherman and Peterson used to spat with each other in the media, who's better, who's worse? Mm-hmm. And Peterson said that Sherman can't do what I do. Sherman can't travel and shadow man-to-man number one receivers, and he's right. But the counter to that is also Peterson can't do what Sherman would do, which is play zone, play to your help, start in a squat position, tackle consistently. He's not great there, but he is so good in man coverage that it really hasn't mattered.
I mean, it's kind of funny because when he was coming out of LSU, everyone saw how big he was and said, like, wow, that's a guy who, you know, do you move him to safety? Is this a cornerback or a safety that we're looking at? And
did they say that? I don't remember that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Coming out of LSU, there was a lot of talk about where Patrick Peterson would play on the next level. Certainly, stylistically, he is not a safety. And look, he's also a guy who slimmed down. He was 225, and he played, I think, in the low 200s the last two seasons.
Yeah, he had some health issues, I guess, that got straightened away, and that fixed everything, which is that's great to see. You want to see the talented guys be able to play to their talent. And he is a willing tackler. You want to give him that. Some of these corners, we haven't talked much about tackling. Maybe we need to give credit where credit is due there.
Yeah.
Like Marcus Peters, for example, that's a guy you want to run against. He has work to do there. And a lot of these guys just aren't built for being great tacklers. Peterson is willing. He's not great, but he's able to do it. Chris Harris is a very good tackler. Looking out the roads, of course. And then I think the best tackler that we've talked about today is Richard Sherman.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Andy, let's reveal the others receiving votes. This, of course, starts at number 11. We had 21 guys get votes on this week's show. Number 11, Jason Verrett. Then we had Malcolm Butler, Vontae Davis, Stephon Gilmore, Casey Hayward, Jalen Ramsey, Joe Hayden, Brent Grimes, Dominique Rogers, Cromartie, Trumaine Johnson, and Darius Slay. I imagine, you know, you're a big, I know you're a big Jason Verrett guy, so I imagine that one stings a little bit.
Well, he hasn't been on the field enough, though. I understand.
Yeah.
Not, I mean, for one, you just listed 21 really good cornerbacks, and
yeah.
All of these guys, I think, deserve to be in a conversation like the one we're having. So that in mind and who we have at top 10, I understand Jason Verrett not getting in there. He hasn't played enough, but when he gets a full season, if he did last year what he did for that first month of the year, if he does that in 2017, he's top three easily. He was sensational the first few weeks of last season.
That was a very measured response, Andy.
Well, it's you can't be extreme on everything. And I don't really Jeff Irwin derailed the show with the Sherman thing as well, and I feel like that kind of kept the hot take thing accounted for. That took all the hot takes. Right there. He put a number 16 guy number one, in my opinion. So I'm going to take all my umbrage that I have built up within me and just apply it to that.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for this show. We have four more of these position ranking shows left. Probably the defensive line coming up next. But if you have an opinion on that, get in touch with us. Like I said, if you leave a note in your iTunes review, we will definitely see it. Otherwise, we'll probably see it. We're not going to ignore you otherwise, but we just might not come across it because right now we are monitoring the world of reviews. But that's a wrap for this show. Thank you to Jeff Irwin, the return of Jeff Irwin as our researcher, making us sound smart and providing the always unique player rankings. And as always, thank you to our producer, Lou Pellegrino, and our editor, Chris Basil, the best in the business work at Digital Media. So happy to be working with those guys, making us sound great. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Like I said, we're going to have the Mega Mailbag show coming up once the position rankings wrap up. Keep those questions coming. Please leave reviews on iTunes / Apple Podcasts, whatever you refer to it as. And, you know, if you have a question, you have a comment, we will definitely see it there. Just leave it right in your review. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.